Tara Arkell is a poet in residence at Sidcot School in North Somerset. She studied literature at Boston University. She's a columnist, journalist, radio and TV presenter. She's also written for film and TV. Tara's had an interesting childhood as her parents are writer and performer Anthony Newley and actor and writer Joan Collins. Tara's first novel, Radio Honey, was shortlisted for the Novel London Literary Festival 2019. And today we're talking about the book. Hi, Tara. A warm welcome to Radio Gorgeous, the all women's podcast.
Hurrah. Yay. Lovely to be with you, Josephine.
So your first novel takes place in an all women radio station, which I know a bit about from personal experience, but can you spill the beans to our listeners, please?
Yes, as you know, radio is an incredible arena. It's very personable. And I actually worked in an all-female radio station myself. So I know what a powerful environment that can be, especially when you put a load of women together and all of that estrogen. And I felt that it offered a perfect premise in which to explore the dynamic of girl on girl, if you like, and the way in which women interact with other women, and also the challenges that women face back when the novel was written and conceived and is situated. But obviously those issues are ongoing today in the 21st century. So I really had a lot of fun writing this. I hope that comes across. People have said they've been spitting their coffee in the morning reading it because they've had quite a few laughs, which is good news. And it's basically follows the story of our lead narrator and protagonist, Cass, who's sort of looking for love, like most red-blooded women. And she finds life incredibly challenging. She's got a father who's a sort of frustrated scientist. So he seems to come up with these kind of counterintuitive offers about what life, the universe, and everything symbolizes. And it sort of pushes Cass's more emotive, as women we are emotive, it's a beautiful thing, we can't knock it, but her more emotive ways of looking at her life. So it's, if you like, a coming of age novel, but I think we're coming of age our entire lives. I don't believe that we ever stop learning. And it's about her search to find a balance in her life and to battle against some of the challenges that are coming her way.
Exactly. Brilliant. So your book is set in the 90s. Why did you choose this decade?
I think that a lot of film and TV is pitching itself in a time before mobile phones. And I don't think that's a mistake. I think we are, a lot of us, kind of romanticizing that period of time because technology has changed the landscape so drastically. And it helps in a way to focus down in more on the characters. For me, I felt that time period before the explosion of the Me Too movement was really interesting because it kind of said a lot about women in an innocent framework, whereas today we have a lot of assumptions about womanhood in the 21st century. And I felt that it would color the language and it would color the story in a way that I didn't want to take it in.
Also, you were in the 90s, so it's probably, you know, your heyday. So it's like, back to the time when I was most, you know what I mean? I'm not saying we're over over anything, because we are a bit older now, but you know what I mean? My time was probably 70s, 80s. I'm a bit older than you, you know, but it's like a time when you sort of felt very, you know, do you feel that you can relate?
I don't think you're older than me, but it was a heyday. Also, musically, each chapter has a different song attached to it. And musically, I really resonate to those musical time periods.
So and you like rave music, would you say?
I was a raver back in the day. Woo! Yeah, they were good days. So yes, I think, you know, for me as well, there is a nostalgia to that time period. And I think, you know, a lot of women reading today will resonate with that time period, like you and I. So I think it was nice to sort of encapsulate those heady days of yore.
Fabulous. Really good fun. You've had many jobs, including presenting on a radio station. Was that the inspiration of because of your experience in a radio station?
I think as a writer, I mean, who knows why we are drawn to certain stories. And certainly I've had projects that started as one particular beast and became something else. And I think as a writer, you have to be prepared to allow the story to tell you where it wants to go. This story very much started and was set in this milieu of an all-female radio station, and it stayed there because I think the lead characters, I had so much fun writing Cass and Courtney, and I think that comes across. These two mad women who are very passionate, full of life. And I also felt very strongly that I wanted to tell the story of strong women and how they are challenged by life, you know? I mean, you know, it's okay if you don't have any spiky edges, you can kind of get through life and nobody challenges you and you don't challenge anybody else. But what happens when you have spiky edges, when you don't want to conform, when you have your own ideas or your ideas go against the grain, you know? I think it's really important to explore those characters. And a lot of stories throughout history have perhaps told stories about women who haven't fit in. They often died under a train, like Anna Karenina. You know, Anna Karenina, I can't even say her name this morning. But I think that it's important to keep telling those stories about strong women, because oftentimes strong women get labelled as bitches, as my mother did with her own career.
And bad as well. You get named as being bad. If you've got are you opinionated, you know, it's like, ooh, she's feisty. When do you ever hear that word applied to a man, you know?
Yeah, 100%.
Yeah.
100%. So I really had fun writing Cass's character because, you know, it gave me an opportunity to really explore the strong female voice. And I think from what I've heard from the reviewers and those who've read it, they've really enjoyed it as well. So that's good news.
Exactly. Now, are you Cass?
And everybody, you know, it's really interesting because I've been researching and reading about Mary Shelley's Frankenstein. And it doesn't matter what author is interrogated or interviewed. As reviewers and as critics and as readers, we always do want to discover how much of that person's life is embedded in the narrative. And you know, as writers, of course, we draw on our life experiences. But if we only drew on our life experiences, that would be autobiography. And however thinly veiled, I'd like to think that as a writer, there is more to my writing ability than to regurgitate my own life experiences. For example, I just spent many years finishing a screenplay about the world of street art. And to do that, I spent years, going down to areas where street art is created, talking to street artists, reading books. And, you know, as a writer, if you just drew on your own experiences, it would be quite a limited palette.
True, true. Very good. I also read that you worked as coordinator at a women's refuge centre. Is that close to your heart?
Very close to my heart. I loved working for the refuge. So I live in the West Country in North Somerset, and I worked in the refuges in our local refuge for a year, and then I was out in the community as a case coordinator. As a victim myself of domestic abuse, I felt it was really an important part of my process and my healing. And I really wanted to give back to the community, and I wanted to be a part of the community that was physically helping to heal and support women, which is why I do the march that I do every year, which maybe we can talk a little bit about. And it was one of the most incredible experiences of my life. I'm still in contact with a lot of the women that I worked with or that I supported. And I feel incredibly empowered by that work. And funnily enough, and strangely, or not at all, actually, because the universe, I believe, is quite structured. I met my husband, my healthy relationship, and my wonderful husband through working in that environment through a co-worker. So I don't, I really credit working there as a really important part of my life.
It changed your life, didn't it? Yeah.
Yeah, it was amazing.
Fantastic. Brilliant.
Amazing, yeah, women.
So tell
amazing.
Us about this march. Your mum went on it.
yeah, she did, which was incredible because she drove all the way up from London. That particular year we had our march in Bristol, and she drove all the way up to be there. And so when I left working for the refuge and for the domestic abuse service, I still wanted to carry on doing something. So I said to my boss at the time, look, I'll take it, because they just always have so much to do and are very, very busy.
Not enough support. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, it's getting worse and worse. Refuges are being shut down. And I said, look, I'd like to keep doing something. And so it was agreed that I would take over trying to do something on this day, the 22nd of November, which is the United Nations Elimination of Violence Against Women Day. It's quite a mouthful. and so it started off as a march, and I had contacted Sir Optimist International, which is a women's organization, which is international. Sir Optimist, SOROPTIMIST, I believe. Because when I was working in the refuges, there was this bookmark, which I found really, really useful when I was going to see the women that I was working with. And it was the simplest bookmark. And on one side, it explained what a healthy relationship is. And on the other side, it explained what a healthy relationship isn't. And I think those kind of boundaries and those kind of very clear cut, that little piece of paper I found so useful in my work to give to my clients. And so when I left the organization, I hooked up with the Sir Optimist who had created this bookmark. And for the last 4 years, we've been out in the community doing a march, raising awareness, handing out these bookmarks. And it's been really fun, really great. We've got to Swindon, as I said, to Bristol, Weston-super-Mare. We tie ribbons in a park which commemorate every woman who's died that year from domestic abuse. One of our members who's a sculptress has put up a beautiful sculpture in the park in Weston-super-Mare. So it's just continuing the conversation. And this year, I wanted that to be more about empowerment and less about victimhood. So this year, the event is called Created Forum. We've got a lot of amazing women who are going to be speaking online this year. Obviously, everything's online. And I feel, I'm sure like you do, that we need to continue having these conversations as women. You know, whatever it's about, we need to touch base with each other. We need to support each other. Historically, women haven't always been the greatest supporters of other women.
I agree. And that
can be quite tragic. You know, I understand that there's a lot of competitiveness with women, and maybe that's sort of sociological, you know, with there being a kind of
finding the leader of the pack sort of thing.
Yeah. 100%. Yeah. So, and I think as women, especially in the 21st century, when, for example, we still don't have parity on pay, I mean, you know, there's so much that still affects us today. And I feel that we really need to turn this tide. We need to keep having this conversation because the only way we're going to change things once and for all is if we lay down a kind of groundwork of what it means to be a woman and how we should be treated. When I worked in domestic abuse, it was really interesting because on the perpetrator program, which is when, you know, guys who were found to be abusive, they were sent on a program to try and rehabilitate them. Fair enough. We had a lot more success with the women than we did with the men, maybe just the 1% success rate with the perpetrator program. But what was really interesting, and they're still working on it, and you know, I believe it is improving from what I've heard last, that the first part of their workshop with the perpetrators is they talk about language. And I think when we look at society and we look at how society needs to change, language is a really good place to start. Because if you look at the way in which we often, men often talk about women like her indoors, the little woman, it's very derogatory.
The old boiler.
Yeah, you know, and if you just watch the body language, for example, of certain couples, and you see the way men denigrate women, if they're, even if they're in the pub with them, and they, you know, they'll say things which really, if you looked at it, you know, quite clearly, you would see that it was derogatory the way they will talk about their partners. And in fact, if you look at programs like EastEnders, people are constantly yelling at each other as if that's normal behavior. In domestic abuse, if you can't have a calm conversation with somebody, it's abusive. If you can't clearly and calmly express yourself and your concerns or your upsets, then that is considered to be part of an abusive cycle. So we really need to go back to our roots, back to the seed level of our understanding of what it means to be a man, a woman, in a relationship, in a society, and start to unpick.
And as you say, but it's like consciousness of, I mean, I look back at sort of childhood and everything, and you realize, you know, it was certain men and things, you weren't conscious what abuse was. You didn't know that being treated badly, you accepted it, you know. I mean, that's the thing. It's raising awareness of what, you know, these women who are being abused, they probably didn't know it was abuse, you know, until it got violent, you know.
Exactly. And now we know that it's not just domestic violence. The term has been changed recently to domestic abuse, because we now know that coercive control, coercive behavior, controlling a woman's finances, her car keys, slowly breaking down her confidence by belittling her, you know, there are very subtle ways in which a perpetrator or a man or a husband or a boyfriend or a partner can undermine a woman slowly but surely until she doubts her own mind. Yeah. And that is a very fragile state to find yourself in. And a lot of the women that I worked with were at that stage where they didn't know their own mind. They only knew what they thought in relation to their partner. And to support women like that is a long process, and it does take time. And when people say, oh, why did she go back? Well, because, you know, she loved him, and because she didn't know who she was. And, you know, if a perpetrator was horrible to you all the time, you wouldn't start that relationship in the first place. But how a perpetrator or an abuser manages to gain control of a woman is by being loving and gentle and kind, and then taking that away and being abusive and horrible, and then apologizing, maybe giving them gifts, maybe giving them love and support, and then taking that away again. So it's a roller coaster, and the woman becomes completely, or sometimes the men, it does happen to men, but not as often, that person is then broken down into somebody who is very weak, who doubts their own mind, and is in no real condition or position to break out on their own. So when we were working with women, we had to allow them the time and the space to truly understand some of the basic concepts that were happening to them.
Also, and they totally lost their confidence, hadn't they? Didn't know who they were, you know.
Yeah.
I mean, that's, you know, they had to get a sense of self back, which, as we know, knockbacks can happen to everyone all the time. You know, they happen to you all the time, you know, have a little, you know, especially at the moment with lockdown, it's like whatever you plan, it's like the rug's under your foot, you know.
In lockdown, it's been even worse, because women have been locked in with their perpetrators and with their family. We mustn't forget the really important element in this as well, which is the children who learn the behavior. They may learn to become the perpetrators or the victim. Yeah. And so the cycle continues. And I think it's one of the last kind of hidden bastions of abuse in society. It's something we don't really see, we don't really talk about. You know, our mothers would have, as you said earlier, wouldn't have understood the language to express the situation. or to understand that they were in an unhealthy relationship.
Yeah, no, I totally agree. You're so articulate, my darling Tara. You're so impressive.
Well, I hope so. Yeah.
So both your parents are, well, your dad sadly died now, but you're wordsmiths. So was it just inevitable that you become a writer, do you think?
I don't think anything's inevitable. I think, you know, a lot of work goes into most of what I think anybody does. If any of us want to do anything, it's not a given, is it, really? I mean, we all have to pursue a course of clear
prove
intent.
Yourself.
Yeah.
But it's in your blood, isn't it? It's in your blood.
So. Yeah, I mean, I think there is a real creative bent in my family, shall we say, and certainly, you know, both my parents can write.
Yeah, exactly. Now, I just want to talk a little bit about your parents. So tell us about your childhood. I'm a great fan of your father's. I adore his music, and as a singer, I've sung Goldfinger many times.
Yeah. Oh my goodness.
So super talented. What a man. Totally inspiring. I mean, you must miss him dreadfully.
I do miss him dreadfully. And my children didn't get the chance to meet him. So I feel that it was a dreadful loss. But I do believe that everything happens for a reason, although we don't often know at the time why. And the loss is... the physical loss is great, but I do feel he's still here in some metaphysical sense. I feel him very strongly in my life still. So there are certain people that when they pass, I feel that they really are gone. But my father, I do feel he's still around and still supporting us in the ways that he can.
So tell us about him, what he was like in private.
He was a funny man. He was a very sensitive and deep man, an incredibly talented man, somewhat haunted by the ghosts of his own childhood. His mother was, he was illegitimate, and him and his mum nearly had to go into the workhouse when they were born, but my grandmother's father took them in. So he had quite a challenging upbringing, and I think that did affect him on some deep level. But of course, created somebody who was able to tap that emotion and write some really profound songs.
Yeah, exactly. So is he more of a wordsmith than the musical side, would you say? Or does he write the music?
He wrote a lot of the great hits with Leslie Bricusse, and they would often change over, so he might write the lyrics on one or the music on another. For example, Feeling Good, the Nina Simone classic. I believe Dad wrote the music on that one and Leslie Bricusse wrote the lyrics. But he did do both.
Brilliant. Genius. And then your mum is still alive, Joan Collins. How proud are you of her?
she's a force of nature. She's incredible. And I'm incredibly proud of both my parents. They're incredible people, you know. So I'm just as in awe of them, I think, as most other people are.
Do you feel like she's your mum, or is she distant, or is she quite close? What's your relationship?
She's definitely my mum. There's no doubt about that. She has a persona that presents to the world. She's an actress. She's a creative person, but she's definitely my mom. I mean, you know, there's no doubt about that. I feel, you know, very loved and cared for, and all those kind of motherly instincts.
That's fabulous. And what was her childhood like? Because obviously she was a child star too, you know.
Yeah, I mean, she grew up during the war, and she had, she came from a loving family, her mother and father. Her mother was very much present, and but she sadly died quite young of breast cancer, and her father remarried. So I think that was one of the great sadnesses of my mother's life, was losing her own mother earlier than
how old was she? when that happened?
I think my mum was sort of early 20s, 21 maybe, when her mum passed.
Yeah, just when you need that, you still need support at that age. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, definitely.
Amazing. So how difficult is it having famous parents? Because it can't always be easy, or always have been.
I think you have to figure out, as anybody does, what it is you want to do. And coming from a very creative and successful background, you need to decide whether you want to venture into that twinkly world or retreat into a completely different environment. I tried a lot of different things, and I'm really glad that I did, because they were all things that I was interested in or felt I'd like to explore. I've, you know, been a TV presenter, I've worked in recording studios as a tape operator, and done lots of mad and crazy things. And I think that they've all helped me to hone in on what it was I wanted to do and what it meant to be Tara, you know.
Yes. Because their identities are so strong, but it's like, who am I? Yeah, yeah, that must
yeah,
be. Really
yeah, yeah. But I think I've
met your brother a few times at parties in London quite recently. Actually, I think he's moved back, hasn't he, from America?
Yeah.
He seems a very successful artist. Yeah, when I've met him, yeah, he seems great.
He's an incredible artist. My goodness, yeah. He's frighteningly good. I mean, yeah. I'm constantly amazed at the work that he produces, I'm in awe of what he does.
It's brilliant though, because again, he's done something, he's still in the artistic world, but he's got his own thing that he does. He's a painter, you know. It's good that he's got his identity.
Yeah, 100%. Yeah,
no, it's great. So lastly, I'm going to ask you, when the hell are you going to start doing podcasting, my darling?
Well, I don't, it's not something that's ever occurred to me. I feel that my days are best spent writing and quietly contemplating my garden and mm-hmm. doing events like the ones that I'm doing. Obviously, also as a poet in residence at the school, I get so much from the kids, from working with them, and writing my poetry, which I still do. So I feel like I've got a really full life, and there always seems so much to do in a day that I'm not sure I could fit anything more in without seriously dampening my health. So, yeah, I'm working on book two now, so that in itself is got my brain well and truly working overtime.
Fabulous. So. Radio Honey by Tara Arkell is out now. Thank you so much for coming into Radio Gorgeous. I've so enjoyed your mind.
Oh, thank you. What a nice thing to say. Thank you, Josephine. I've loved being with all you gorgeous people. Thank you.
It's a pleasure.